If I ask you to think about books that really defined and informed your childhood, I bet several titles would spring to mind quite quickly. I'm also guessing that for many of us, one or more of the Little House books by Laura Ingalls Wilder would be on that list. Hi, I'm Judith Sears Poisson, sitting in today for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pamela Smith-Hill is the award-winning author of Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Writer's Life, and three young adult novels. She grew up in the Missouri Ozarks, 40 miles from Laura Ingalls Wilder's Rocky Ridge Farm, and moved to South Dakota, where she launched her professional writing career. She's the editor of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography published just last month. Pamela, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. I mean, of course, you know, as a Laura Ingalls Wilder scholar, that, you know, Laura's saga begins right here in Wisconsin in the Big Woods. And so she certainly cherished here in Wisconsin, but certainly much farther out than that. She's best known for that series of books that became known as the Little House books, but writing that autobiographical fiction was actually a later stage in her career. How did Laura start writing in the first place?
Well, we're not entirely sure how or when Laura Ingalls Wilder started writing or what motivated her to write the autobiography in particular, but she began writing professionally when she was in her 40s. She became first a columnist and then a page editor for the Missouri Ruralist. She started writing in 1911 and continued to write for the newspaper until the mid-1920s. The Missouri Ruralist was the leading agricultural newspaper in the state of Missouri at the time, and in fact, it's still publishing today.
And actually, I found it really interesting that her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane, was actually at the time a better known writer than her mother was. What was Rose known for?
Rose Wilder Lane launched her professional career at about the same time as Laura Ingalls Wilder. In about 1910 or 1911, she started working for newspapers in Kansas City. She married Gillette Lane, moved to San Francisco, and Rose Wilder Lane began writing for the San Francisco Bulletin. She was quite ambitious and quickly became a successful writer, moving beyond the Bulletin to write for important regional magazines like Sunset, and then contributing to such magazines as the Ladies' Home Journal. She also was able to turn her work for magazines like Sunset into book deals. In the early 20th century, successful writers often published works of fiction and nonfiction first in serial form in magazines, and then, if those serials were successful, could negotiate a book deal. So in the 1920s, Rose Wilder Lane was known as a magazine contributor as well as an author of fiction and nonfiction.
And one of the aspects of Pioneer Girl that I really enjoyed was learning about the relationship between the adult Rose and her mother, Laura, both personally and professionally. Let's start with their personal relationship first. How would you characterize their relationship?
Well, again, it's kind of hard to say too much about Laura Ingalls Wilder's position here. What I can say with clarity is in the few letters that survive that are more personal in nature, and also in several of the editorial letters that survive between Laura and Rose. For the most part, Laura was very warm and cordial, and in fact, readers of Pioneer Girl will see in the version of the manuscript that we published as the basis for Pioneer Girl that Laura Ingalls Wilder added a few personal notes directed to her daughter in the manuscript. So it appears that the two of them were very cordial. Rose Wilder Lane, on the other hand, kept extensive diaries and was a correspondent to several writing friends. And on the one hand, she would write warm, loving messages about her mother. She published several pieces about both of her parents and talked about them very tenderly. Rose Wilder Lane called her mother Mama Bess. Bess was Almanzo's name for Laura. But also you can see in the surviving correspondence and diaries from Rose that she often was very frustrated with her mother. Rose Wilder Lane was a very opinionated woman. She was a very opinionated little girl. She, by her own account, from the age of five, she knew exactly what she wanted to do. So I think both of these women were very strong-willed, and Rose Wilder Lane had a clear vision of what she wanted and what her values were. And when her parents' values, and specifically her mother's values, got in the way, the two sometimes clashed. But I think they remained very close. Well, I know they remained very close throughout their life. So they had the kind of relationship that mothers and daughters often do, warm and tender on the one hand, yet frustrating and sometimes irritating on the other.
Rose was actually divorced, which in that time period certainly was not that common. Do you have any sense of how her mother, Laura, or her father felt about that?
Again, because Laura Ingalls Wilder didn't keep a journal in the traditional sense, there's really very little that survives to indicate how Laura Ingalls Wilder felt about the divorce specifically. However, I haven't found any indication that Laura and El Manzo viewed Rose Wilder Lane less affectionately or with disapproval because of her divorce. I don't think that was a significant factor at all.
We are talking with Pamela Smith-Hill. She is the editor of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography just released last month. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson sitting in for Larry Mueller. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of Laura Ingalls Wilder? What was your first exposure to her story? And maybe there's a character or episode in the Little House books that you're curious about. I'm quite sure Pamela can tell you something about it. And we'll talk about the extensive research that went into Pamela's annotated autobiography for Laura in just a little bit. Well, we talked a little bit, Pamela, now about their personal relationship, but Rose and Laura also had a much more extensive professional relationship than most mothers and daughters would have. How would you describe, they were both very accomplished writers, and it seemed to me had a lot of respect for each other.
Yes, for the most part, the two women had a great deal of respect for each other, particularly Laura Ingalls Wilder. In fact, in one of her columns for the Missouri Ruralist, Laura wrote lovingly about her daughter Rose and listed her as one of the important Missourians in the state of Missouri for her literary contributions. And Rose, I think, felt that her mother had a great deal of potential. In fact, Rose was very ambitious for her mother and wanted Laura to move beyond writing for the Missouri Ruralist and think about what Rose called the big markets, the markets that Rose herself was writing for, Sunset, Ladies' Home Journal, and ultimately even the Saturday Evening Post, which was one of the leading magazine titles of the period. As early as 1915, although the two women had launched their professional careers at the same time, Rose took her mother under her wing, and in a trip to San Francisco, Laura worked closely with Rose to improve her writing skills for those big markets. Rose said that, of course, your Missouri Ruralist columns are terrific. They stand out from everything else in the newspaper, but you have to learn to write differently for a national audience. And so from about 1915 on, Rose Wilder Lane coached her mother in writing for national audiences. And under Rose's supervision, Wilder actually wrote three magazine articles, one for McCall's magazine and two for Country Gentleman, both national magazines from the 1920s, and was successfully published there. When Wilder began work on Pioneer Girl, her autobiography, it's very clear from the context of the rough draft manuscript that Wilder intended for Rose to read the manuscript both as a daughter and as an editor. And she actually presented Rose with Pioneer Girl on, I believe it was May 7th, 1930, and it was very clear from the context of Rose's journal that her mother expected Rose to edit and type the manuscript and prepare it for national publication. So from very, very early on in both of their writing careers, they assumed the role of writer and editor.
Hmm. And Pioneer Girl was written on, I'm probably getting it wrong, but I think 7 tablets of paper just written out longhand, maybe paragraphs, but no chapter breaks, nothing to kind of delineate the story.
It appears from the rough manuscript, you're absolutely right. It was written on Big Chief and 50-50 tablet paper with just ordinary lead pencils, that Wilder wanted to get the story down as quickly as she could in one whole piece, which I think is important. This was her first book-length narrative, and so many writers, when they're attempting to write a book-length manuscript, spend too much time worrying about a sentence here or a paragraph here. What a lot of writers don't know when they're trying to write something this long is that the first objective is to get a rough draft down on paper. Once you have something with a beginning, middle, and end that sustains the story arc all the way through to the end, you can go back and fix what's wrong. The big challenge for most writers just starting out with book-length work is the daunting task of writing 200 pages or 300 pages and how to do that. So it's pretty clear from the context of the manuscript that Wilder knew enough about book-length narrative that she knew she just had to capture it on the page first and then work with Rose to make the revisions that all writers have to make to a manuscript.
Mm-hmm. And she and Rose wanted to see it published for an adult audience. It was, you point out in the introduction that it's clearly written for an older audience than the Little House books eventually were. But there's also an intimacy to it. Like you said, there are these asides to Rose. So it really feels like she's writing for an adult friend or an adult daughter.
Yes. The rough draft manuscript is clearly has two purposes. One, it's a mother writing her story for her daughter with asides. Rose, this is where your name came from, Wilder wrote when describing Wild Roses on the Prairie. Or, here's a story, but I don't want you to use this, but I want you to know about it. So there are those kinds of personal comments. There are also the kinds of notations that all writers make in a rough draft, saying, oh, skip to the next page, or go to the back, or I'm not sure how to spell this. So Wilder was writing very quickly, but she was writing at once for her daughter's personal pleasure, but also writing with instructions to Rose about publication and revision, even in that rough draft. So this version of Pioneer Girl was both a personal memoir and a professional one.
And, of course, you said that when she presented it to Rose, that initial rough draft, it was 1930. And, of course, that was a very significant time in the country, including economically with the Great Depression. And I hadn't realized, obviously, every industry was affected by the Depression, but the publishing industry, it really affected how much they were acquiring.
Yes, indeed. In 1930, the magazine industry, publishing in general, was depressed. Most of the magazines had quite a bit of inventory on hand. By that, I mean lots of manuscripts in their files. Advertisers were pulling and cutting their advertising budgets. It was a very lean time. And Rose herself was feeling the pinch. She was worried about making ends meet, paying bills. She had, in 1928, built a retirement house for her parents on Rocky Ridge Farm. And this was in 1928, before the stock market crashed. Lane went into debt to build this, and yet she was earning well and expecting her career to continue to go on swimmingly. And yet the stock market crash occurred in 1929, and Rose Wilder Lane was very concerned about her own professional career. And so when her mother presented Pioneer Girl to her in May 1930, it's clear from the context of Lane's diaries that she was hoping that this autobiography would sell, because her own career was not progressing as she had hoped.
We are talking with Pamela Smith Hill. She's the award-winning author of Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Writer's Life. And most recently, she is the editor of Laura Ingalls Wilder's Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Carl Christensen, our on-air producer today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about Laura Ingalls Wilder, and we are discussing her life and her work with Pamela Smith Hill, who is the editor of the brand new, newly published Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography of Laura Ingalls Wilder. And Pamela, we do have some listeners who would like to join the conversation, so let's go to the phone. And Carol in Rice Lake is up first. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually used to be a teacher in Barron County, and we had a, in fact, they still do have what's called a Little House Day, where the children spend the entire day dressed up like the characters from Laura's books, and for a whole month we revolved our curriculum around things from those books. But the question I have is about some of the resources I've read, because I've always been a really avid fan of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Two books that I read over the last 20 years. One was called The Ghost in the Little House, A Life of Rose Wilder Lane, and the other one was called Becoming Laura Ingalls Wilder, The Woman Behind the Legend. And I'm wondering if the author has read those books and how she feels about those books.
Great. Thanks for that call, Carol. Pamela?
Yes, I think those two books are definitive in Wilder studies. So anyone who is really interested in Laura Ingalls Wilder research should read both of those books. The Ghost in the Little House by William Holtz is a biography of Rose Wilder Lane, and he contends that Rose Wilder Lane was actually the creative genius behind the Little House books, and that Laura Ingalls Wilder herself had absolutely no talent, and that Rose Wilder Lane is largely responsible for Wilder's literary reputation. The other book, Becoming Laura Ingalls Wilder, is by John Miller. And what I think John does so beautifully in his book is he places Laura Ingalls Wilder in her cultural and historical milieu. And I think it's a very important work because readers can get a better sense of what was happening politically, culturally, socially in the world as Wilder was living it, and I think that's it's a very, very important biography. Getting back to Holtz's book, one of the things that I discovered when I was doing my research on Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Writer's Life, was the nature of the correspondence between the two women as Laura Ingalls Wilder was working on the Little House books. And it became clear to me that what I was looking at was editorial correspondence. The two women were talking about where to start a book, where to end a book, which characters to keep, which ones to cut, what descriptions were the most vivid, what the voice should be for the book. And that kind of discussion is absolutely essential, and it's actually routine in the publishing business between a writer and an editor. What was unique in this case was that Wilder's editor was her mother, or was her daughter, and this mother-daughter editorial relationship was a secret from Wilder's publisher, Harper & Brothers. So once I saw the nature of that correspondence, and sometimes Laura Ingalls Wilder was arguing against Rose's recommendations. Sometimes Rose won an argument, sometimes she lost. It showed me that there was a great deal of complexity, and this wasn't simply a case of Rose Wilder Lane ghostwriting the books. Laura Ingalls Wilder was passionately involved in the process, and the stories were her own. I think the other important point here is that Rose Wilder Lane herself wrote two novels based on Pioneer Girl, on her mother's work. And those two novels, although they were written for adults, have a totally different voice. And in fact, the only reason they are read today is because of Rose's association with Wilder. So it seems to me that it's hard to make a case for creative genius here in Rose's case when her own novels fall so far short from the creative intensity and dynamics of the Little House books themselves. Hmm.
And it's interesting you brought up that Rose actually used material from Pioneer Girl for her own work. If I remember correctly, that was not with Laura's knowledge before they were published, and Laura wasn't too happy about that.
Yes, exactly. Up until 1932, I should say, the relationship as we can see it in surviving correspondence editorially between the two women was cordial. Editors and writers often argue, but it was always good-natured argument. But friction developed between Wilder and Lane in 1932. They were living in houses about half a mile apart, and they saw each other almost every day. By then, Wilder had finished revisions on Little House in the Big Woods, her first novel, and it was scheduled for publication in 1932. She had worked closely with Lane on this project from beginning to end, and was beginning the first draft of her second book, Farmer Boy. Meanwhile, Lane was working on a novel she called Courage. Now, its main characters were named Charles and Caroline, and the story came directly from the pages of Pioneer Girl. Lane apparently did not tell her mother about this project until it was published by the Saturday Evening Post as Let the Hurricane Roar in the fall of 1932, just months after Little House in the Big Woods had been released. And I suspect that for Wilder, this must have felt like a personal and professional betrayal. She must have worried that a frontier novel from a prestigious author like her daughter would undercut the success of Little House in the Big Woods. So in the late fall and winter, early winter of 1932, 1933, there was a great deal of tension between the two women. In fact, Rose Wilder Lane left Rocky Ridge Farm. She went to New York. And yet still, the two women worked through the crisis. And while Rose Wilder Lane was back in New York, she visited Malone, New York, where her father had grown up. She started sending postcards and letters and information back to her mother, describing the setting in Malone, talking about people who remembered her father. And all of this was really useful for Wilder. She was working on Farmer Boy. So that the crisis eventually passed, the two women resumed their role as writer and editor on the Little House books. And just 5 years later, when Wilder was working on By the Shores of Silver Lake, Rose Wilder Lane was working on yet another Pioneer Girl-based novel called Free Land. But this time around, Wilder's career as a novelist was secure, and Lane was openly discussing plans for this book with her mother. In fact, both Wilder and her husband, Elmanzo, provided research tips to Lane on this, on her second novel based on Pioneer Girl. So they patched things up. But that crisis back in late 1931 and 1932 was indeed serious.
We are talking with Pamela Smith-Hill about Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography of Laura Ingalls Wilder. Pamela is the editor of that newly released book. Let's go back to the phones and Jeff in Warrens. Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hi.
Question for Pam. My name is Jeff Stolison, and I just popped the radio on. And I'm originally a bot. And the bots are first cousins to the Ingalls.
Oh,
and we are actually part of the Ingalls family. And this spring, one of the elder part of the Ingalls family, Sonny Ingalls, passed away. We, right now, I know of, and they are part of Laurel's extended family. And my mom and I were talking about this. And Rick, which is Sonny's son, and then there's Sonny Jr. And Melissa. He had three children. Rick didn't realize this when I was talking to him the other day about this. We don't have a lot of family tree information on the Ingalls side. We have more on the Bott side. There were three families that were kind of involved the True family, which was come up out of Oklahoma, the Ingalls family, of course, that was the Plains, and then the Bott family, which was German. And it was a brother-sister kind of, married brother-sister kind of thing. But we're directly tied back on the tree into Laura Ingalls.
So, Jeff, it sounds like you're looking to find more information about that part of the tree. And actually, Pamela, that's a great time to talk about, you know, this annotated autobiography is, it's so amazing how much research and additional information and photos and documentation that you include. It's really just staggering. So, first of all, where did you go to find the resources that you used to annotate this autobiography?
Well, a great place to start, particularly if you're trying to find answers about your family tree, is to look at census information. And there are all kinds of sites with census information that is now online, and that is incredibly helpful. And I will say that if you go to a site like Ancestry.com, you'll find a lot of work that has already been done on the Ingalls family. Not only will you be able to look at census documents up through 1940, but there are members of the family who have posted short profiles of family members, who have updated information about descendants, where they lived, short biographical sketches of different people. So going to a reputable online site, viewing the census records, and then looking at the amendments and additions that other family members have added to the family tree can be incredibly helpful, and it's a relatively easy thing to do. It's time consuming, but it is available to anyone. It's not just available mm-hmm. to scholars. So if any of your listeners are interested in tracking down their family tree, I advise going back and starting with some of those census records. Those proved to be incredibly helpful as I was working on the annotations for the autobiography. I found that, with rare exceptions, almost all of the people that Wilder mentions in Pioneer Girl were traceable through census records, and I found that to be remarkable. Wilder had an amazing memory, especially when you consider that most of Pioneer Girl, or a great part of it, chunk of it, deals with Wilder's early childhood. So she remembered people from Wisconsin and Minnesota when she was 6, 7, 8 years old. And I think very few of us could remember those details as accurately as Laura Ingalls Wilder did. I also worked from old newspaper accounts, diaries, journals, correspondence. I worked with archivists at the Herbert Hoover Presidential Library, which holds most of Rose Wilder Lane's papers. The people in Mansfield, Missouri, the Laura Ingalls Wilder Home and Museum Association there, who run Laura Ingalls Wilder's museum and homes, also have a great deal of archival information. So does the Association in DeSmet. So it was really, I really benefited from several organizations who had comprehensive archives and shared that material with me as well. I also want to say, too, that there's so much information now online that wasn't available 10 years ago or 12 years ago, and that also helped. One of the things that I found fascinating is that Laura Ingalls Wilder in Pioneer Girl mentioned 3 books from her childhood that were very important to her, including what your listeners probably will remember as Pa's Big Green Book. And all three of those books are now online, and you can read them and look at them as Laura Ingalls Wilder did as a girl.
So they're fully digitized.
Although we're looking at it digitally, but you can see the engravings from the book that Wilder mentions, The Polar Whirls, and even a little book of poetry that Wilder received on her birthday when she was, I believe, turned 5 years old. That's available digitally online, and that really brings the past into the present, I think.
Wow. given that Pioneer Girl was written for an adult audience and the Little House books were for children, it's not surprising that there would be differences. What are some of the stories that are in Pioneer Girl that don't appear in the juvenile series?
Well, there's a whole chunk from Wilder's life that she deliberately chose not to write about. When the family moved to Minnesota in 1874, Minnesota, that part of the state, southwestern Minnesota, was suffering from a plague of grasshoppers, and it wasn't just one year, it was a cycle. And so from 1874 to 1876, when the Wilders were living in Minnesota for the first time, or the Ingalls were living in Minnesota for the first time, their crop, their wheat crop, was wiped out one year after another by grasshoppers, and the family gave up on farming. Charles Ingalls turned his back on living on the land, and he moved east, not west. And they moved to Burr Oak, Iowa in 1876, initially to manage a hotel. They stayed in Iowa for only a year. They left in 1877, returned to Minnesota, and were in Minnesota until 1879. But again, Charles Ingalls didn't work the land. He had sold his farm when he left Minnesota the first time. And as I said, he gave up on farming, on living off the land for those years. And Laura Ingalls Wilder felt that that was a different kind of story, that it wouldn't fit into the vision of the westering, pioneering family that she had created in the Little House series. Also during this period of time, as the family was leaving Minnesota and moving to Iowa, Wilder's infant brother, Freddie, died. He died at the age of 9 months, and Laura Ingalls Wilder chose not to write about that either. This whole period of her life, from 1877 through 1879, when the family finally left Minnesota to go to Dakota Territory, the family lived in town, and they were townspeople, and Laura Ingalls Wilder, the real Laura Ingalls Wilder, was a bit more worldly and less sheltered than the Laura Ingalls of her fiction. And so there are story after story about townspeople in their lives that would not necessarily have been appropriate in children's books of the 1930s and early 1940s, and more importantly, undermined the theme, the character, the plot of her Little House books, so she deliberately chose not to write about them.
And Laura is committed to historical accuracy, and that really comes through in her correspondence with Rose and comments about edits, but she also wanted to tell a good story. And how do you feel like she struck the balance between those two?
Well, she was writing historical fiction. It was autobiographical fiction, but it was historical fiction. And so in fiction, writers have more leeway, even when you're writing historical fiction, to tell a better story. I think Wilder balanced that issue very, very well. She knew from the beginning what she wanted her characters to do and say and what she wanted her overriding themes to be. And so she made strategic choices based on what she felt would be right for readers, what she felt would be right for her characters and her stories. I think she struck a very good balance. And if you look at the correspondence, editorial correspondence, which I quote from extensively in the biography Writer's Life, you can see that Wilder really understood clearly her characters and their stories, I think even better than her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane.
We had a comment on Facebook from Cheryl. She says, "We learned when we did a Laura Ingalls Wilder trip that the Laura Ingalls Wilder Japanese fan club is the largest in the world. Busloads of them come to visit the various sites." What do you think is so universal about Laura Ingalls Wilder and her story?
I think that's a very good question. Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House books seem to cut across cultures, geography, different societies. They speak to people directly in some way, despite the very American nature of this story. And I think Wilder's creative legacy is apparent in two key issues. First, the character of Laura herself, who is fierce and loyal and strong and yet flawed. She's not perfect. She's not like her sister Mary. So I think there's that sense among readers that she is very believable and very credible. The second great gift, I think, from Wilder's Little House books is that voice. It's a very unique voice, very personal, very intimate, and yet there are spaces within that voice so that readers can project their own feelings and emotions, their own values, and come away feeling that Wilder is speaking to them directly. And perhaps that, in fact, is the greatest gift. There's this sense that Wilder is talking to each reader individually and personally through the Little House books.
You have spent a lot of time studying, writing about, and really being with Laura Ingalls Wilder. What first drew you to her, and what keeps you working on her writing?
Well, as you mentioned in the introduction, I grew up in the Missouri Ozarks, about 40 miles from Rocky Ridge Farm, where Laura Ingalls Wilder wrote Pioneer Girl as well as the Little House books. And I was a bookworm. I was a reader and was always looking for good books. And one of our neighbors recommended the Little House books. And she said, oh, by the way, Laura Ingalls Wilder is a Missouri writer. Well, that intrigued me because even at the age of 10, I thought I wanted to be a writer. But I believe that writers lived very different lives than I did in the Missouri Ozarks, that they lived in New York or California or England, and their lives were very sophisticated and polished and urbane. And then I discovered that Laura Ingalls Wilder was a farm woman from the Ozarks where I grew up, and that was a revelation to me. And then when I started reading the books and realized that the Laura in the books grew up to be the Laura Ingalls Wilder who wrote the books, I was hooked. And so from a very early age, Laura Ingalls Wilder influenced me as a writer and as a reader. And then I moved on to South Dakota. When I lived in South Dakota, where Wilder set five of her Little House books, my appreciation for Laura Ingalls Wilder grew because she has such a strong sense of the prairie and that environment that I realized that Laura Ingalls Wilder wasn't simply an important children's book writer. She was an important American author.
I have to ask, did you move to South Dakota because of Laura, or is that just an incredible coincidence?
It's an incredible coincidence. but, you know, when I was growing up in southern Missouri, we had snowstorms, but we didn't have anything like Wilder describes in the long winter. And I come from a family of storytellers, and we always tell tall tales and we exaggerate. And when I was a kid and read The Long Winter for the first time, I thought Laura Ingalls Wilder was simply exaggerating that winter to tell a better story. And then when I was in my 20s and I experienced my first Dakota blizzard, my estimation of Wilder increased dramatically because I realized that those Dakota prairies are indeed as harsh and as dangerous and as deadly as she described in the books.
What does it feel like to help bring this manuscript, Pioneer Girl, to the public 80 years after it was written?
I have to say, I feel incredibly honored to be able to help bring this book to the public. The South Dakota State Historical Society Press has done a beautiful job with this book, and I am grateful to have been part of this project and to have shared the project with the editorial staff there. When I visited Rocky Ridge Farm for the first time when I was 11 years old, and I saw Wilder's manuscripts on display in her house, that's where they were displayed all those years ago, I felt an incredible connection with her then. But I never would have imagined that I would have been part of a project like this to bring a manuscript that Wilder herself sought to publish but was unsuccessful at doing so to a larger audience. It's been a terrific honor.
Well, Pamela Smith Hill, thank you so much for spending time with us today. And I think a lot of people are going to want to read Pioneer Girl, the annotated autobiography, and probably go back and read those Little House books, too.
I hope so.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Pamela Smith Hill is the award-winning author of Laura Ingalls Wilder, A Writer's Life, but most recently she's the editor of Laura's autobiography, Pioneer Girl. She annotated it completely. It's really a fascinating read. Well, we are going to talk about another Wisconsin icon in just a couple minutes. We're going to look at Frank Lloyd Wright and the influence of different thinkers on his writing, which was a very robust career alongside his architecture. Jerome Klinkowitz is the author of Frank Lloyd Wright and His Manner of Thought. So I hope you'll stay tuned right here to the Ideas Network.